This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy's good!
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings. Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports podcast hosted by two or more African-Americans. I'm the godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by my partner in crime, Marcus Vandenberg. What's going on, brother?
What's up, Nate? Man, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. How's your week been since last we talked? You head back out to Vegas?
I'm so done with Vegas. I'm tired of I love Vegas, but I don't know if I mentioned this on the show, but I'm getting married in Las Vegas next April. So
you gonna be driving through that little white chapel?
No, I'm not gonna have to drug my fiance to.
That's good. That's always good
to get her to say yes. But between wedding plans and UFC and NBA and just, yeah, so I am no more Vegas trips until the fall.
All right.
Knock on wood.
You already booked the reception at Jabbar?
Yeah, Jabbar is going to open bar at Jabbar. They're going to take care of all the alcohol. Lack of security will be a plus because, you know, who wants security when you have open bar, so.
And there's no cameras that'll catch you.
Yeah, that's good too.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Good stuff. So, my week was all right. I just worked a lot.
Yeah, what was it? You had like a 14-hour shift or something?
Yeah, I had a 14-hour shift. Days were running together, but it was Sunday. Went in at 7 and got out around 9:30, 10 o'clock. It's not a hard job by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a long day in the kitchen.
But you're on your feet the entire time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. That's a lot of chicken.
I was going to say, it's a lot of chicken. So unless I can find a hustle for this spot like Gus on Breaking Bad.
a drug hustle?
Like, damn, these value meals really are selling. Great job, Nate. But, I need to find something where I can get paid to sit on my butt and talk. So if there are any investors out there that would like to fund a Kings of Sports show, contact us at thekingsofsport@gmail.com.
There you go.
Maybe we need to start like a what's the crowdfunded, what a Kickstarter?
Kickstarter.
GoFundMe. Like there needs to be like a Kickstarter, but for like rich people, like not for the public, but like rich idiots that just want to blow their money.
That's called investors.
We need to talk. We need to talk to some investors.
Yeah,
like we've got a great show that has a great slice into the market. We've branded ourselves. You can reach a lot of diverse audiences. Use all the
buzzwords.
PR speak. Yeah, the buzzwords. we'll have to get on that after the show. But we do have a great show this week. A lot of interesting things to talk about in the world of sports and the world of sports entertainment. There will be wrestling talk, at least to some degree, on this particular podcast. But I remember last week, Marcus, you and I, we were very excited that now that football is kind of quiet, the NBA is kind of quiet, and we're going to get to talk baseball on the Kings of Sport.
Yeah, so how's that working out?
Not so good, because this week in the A block, we're going to kick it off with an interesting story that I guess just broke a day or so ago.
Yeah, Monday.
Monday. It broke on Monday. We're recording this on Tuesday, and it involves Tony Dungy, respected NFL coach and now analyst for NBC Sports, and Michael Sam, the draftee for the St. Louis Rams, and as you could imagine, it's controversial.
Of course, because you mentioned Michael Sam, and yeah, it's one of those stories. If you haven't heard it by now, Tony Dungy was quoted in a Tampa Tribune story about Derrick Brooks, actually, about Michael Sam, and his exact quote was, in response to, or the question was, would he have, you know, selected Michael Sam? And his quote was, I wouldn't have taken him, Dungy said in the story, not because I don't believe Michael Sam should have a chance to play, but I wouldn't want to deal with all of it. It's not going to be totally smooth. Things will happen. And as soon as that story came out, social media does what social media does, and it filled in some words. I just read the quote. You heard the quote. It didn't say he wouldn't have drafted Michael Sam because he's gay. But that was the part that was filled in on social media, and that's the part I didn't really appreciate, especially TMZ, who ran with the same headline but just added in because he's gay at the end of it. And, you know, when you do stuff like that, you're asking for wildfires. And, you know, the story really took off, and Dungy ended up releasing a statement. Quote, on Monday afternoon while on vacation with my family, I was quite surprised to read excerpts from an interview I gave several weeks ago related to this year's NFL draft, and I feel compelled to clarify those remarks. I was asked whether I would have drafted Michael Sam, and I answered that I would not have drafted him. I gave my honest answer, which is that I felt drafting him would bring much distraction to the team. At the time of my interview, the Oprah Winfrey reality show that was going to chronicle Michael's first season had been announced. I was not asked whether or not Michael Sam deserves an opportunity to play in the NFL. He absolutely does. I was not asked whether his sexual orientation play a part in the evaluation process. It should not. I was not asked whether I would have a problem having Michael Sam on my team. I would not. I have been asked all of those questions several times in the last 3 months, and have always answered them the same way by saying that playing in the NFL is and should be about merit. The best players make the team, and everyone should get the opportunity to prove whether they're good enough to play. That's my opinion as a coach, but those are not the questions I was asked. What I was asked about my philosophy on drafting, a philosophy that was developed over the years, which was to minimize distractions for my teams. I do not believe Michael's sexual orientation will be a distraction to his teammates or his organization. I do, however, believe that the media attention that comes with it will be a distraction. Unfortunately, we are all seeing this play out now, and I feel badly that my remarks played a role in this distraction. I wish Michael Sam nothing but the best in his quest to become a star in the NFL, and I am confident he will get the opportunity to show what he can do on the field. My sincere hope is that we will be able to focus on his play and not on his orientation, sexual orientation, quote unquote. So, what are your thoughts about all that?
This is a very interesting issue because it crosses lines of race and sexuality and faith. One of the things that people are kind of latching onto is that because Tony Dungy personally, as a Christian, has issues with homosexuality, and he's been a proponent of, you know, or I guess an opponent of gay marriage in the past, and they're trying to connect the dots. But as Tony stated in his, I don't know if you'd call it an apology, a mea culpa, an explanation, you know, he's thinking strictly as a coach. And in the article, you know, as somebody that's been a journalist for a while, if you talk to somebody for an hour, everything they say is not going to go into that piece.
Yeah.
There's space constraints, time constraints. And so a lot of times, you know, what is left unsaid may be more telling than what is printed. And for Tony, I think that he's right, you know, and we'll get into the Michael Vick aspect of this controversy here in a second. But just as a coach, you know, I can tell you from knowing guys that have played for Tony Dungy from the Hampton Roads area that he was always consistent. Whether you were Peyton Manning or David Macklin or Antoine Bethea, he was consistent. Obviously, stars maybe got a little bit more leeway, but they also had more responsibility on the team. And it was very much an organization and an atmosphere of accountability. And Tony Dungy, as different as he is from Bill Belichick in a lot of aspects, he is similar in the fact that they are both coaches that don't like a lot of noise around their programs. And I think that what he was saying about Michael Sam is, you know, the noise that generated that would generate from having Michael Sam on your team, especially if you ask him right around when the Oprah deal was going down, you know, that's not something that he'd want to be a part of. And I can't really blame him for that.
Yeah, it's a complicated situation. You know, considering Tony's outspoken and open religious views, it puts him in a tough spot because, you know, people just assume that because he said these words that, you know, he's homophobic or he wouldn't draft him because he's gay. And it's not fair. I mean, you got to remember, the story was about Derrick Brooks. It wasn't about Michael Sam. So context is everything. Do I think Tony Dungy is homophobic? No. But do I think Tony Dungy stands by his Christian beliefs and faith? Yes. Is that a problem? No, it's not. But it's, you know, in terms of distraction, we're talking about a 7th-round pick at the end of the day. And the fact that we're having this discussion on July 22nd about a 7th-round pick proves, in theory, what Tony Dungy is discussing. Like, this is going to be a distraction. This will continue to be a distraction, I think, until the Rams decide to do whatever with him, whether that's, you know, practice squad or Tottenham or et cetera. It's just unfortunate that, you know, Tony's comments came out and, you know, it wasn't really clear. And, you know, instead of having this discussion yesterday with, you know, trying to follow with him yesterday, I did hear today that he was on a family vacation and he was sort of out of pocket. But, you know, the media just jumped to the conclusion about what he was trying to say without actually trying to follow with the guy. So that's my biggest issue with this story.
Yeah, and then just take a look at that keyword distraction. Now, I think there's a difference between somebody that is a distraction and something that is, you know, a locker room cancer. Because, you know, let's be clear about this. Whether you're gay, straight, black, white, whatever, Michael Sam would be a distraction on any team in the sense that if you've got a job to do and there's a lot of noise about one particular aspect of your organization, that can be distracting. But that doesn't mean that it's going to keep you from doing your job. Like, I could be mowing the grass and there's a dog in the next yard that's barking at me. That might distract me for a second, but it's not going to stop me from mowing the lawn. You know, and I think that people are reading too much into that word, attribute homophobic tendencies to Tony Dungy. TMZ has been all over this, and I think there's a degree of recklessness with their coverage of the story. And, you know, some of the headlines that you mentioned, like the dot, 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 because he's gay, or Tony Dungy, you know, in bold letters, I am not a homophobe, and they picked this picture of Tony that's not the most flattering shot of coach. The other aspect of this story, and Keith Olbermann, who has a show on ESPN2, which I enjoy frequently, and, you know, his commentary is always smart and funny, and even if you don't agree with it, you know, it's smart and funny. He, you know, went out and basically said that Tony Dungy was a hypocrite, talked about Tony being one of his worst persons in the sports world, and said, you know, this is the guy that stood up for Michael Vick. How can he reconcile not standing up for Michael Sam? And then he also went on to say that this is a league that has, you know, a history, or in the past has examples of racial intolerance. And, you know, what if some organization looked at Tony the way that Tony is, quote unquote, looking at Michael Sam? And I think that they were well-formed points by Keith, but I think he was missing a boat on it.
Yeah, you mentioned Michael Vick, and, you know, Tony Dungy was an advocate of Michael Vick after the dog fighting charges, and he really helped him get back in the NFL and back in the graces of teams. But if we're going to compare what Michael Vick, the talent, the football player, to Michael Sam, the talent football player, there's no comparison, unfortunately.
Right, and even then, like with the Michael Vick thing, like you mentioned, he was an advocate. He wasn't an active coach. You know, it would have been an interesting story if Michael Vick had an opportunity to go to the Colts when Tony was coaching. then we would have seen, you know, what that would have been like. But in that capacity, he was basically just kind of the liaison to the league and to the Eagles with Mike Vick.
Yeah, and to credit Michael Vick, he wasn't a distraction when he came back to the NFL. You know, you had the protesters and all that stuff, but he hasn't done anything since then that would be considered a distraction for a team, besides stinking on the field. So,
in fact, you could say he's been a better leader.
He has since been
coming back with the Riley Cooper incident.
He saved Riley Cooper's ass. Riley Cooper could have been dead on that team in Philadelphia, and instead the Eagles learned to embrace him, thanks in part because Michael Vick was the guy. Was the voice of reason in that locker room and said, "Hey, look, you know, this guy made a mistake, and you know, we need to move on as a team." And you know, Cooper flourished last season as a result. So, if anything, he's been, you know, a quote unquote model NFL citizen since his comeback to the NFL.
And you mentioned the protest, and some teams could see that as a distraction. You know, that I'm sure the Eagles didn't appreciate all of that attention, just like I'm sure the Jets didn't appreciate the circus that came with Tim Tebow.
Yeah.
You know, these are all these are all different situations. And, you know, it's not really the player's fault in any of these cases, whether you're talking about Vic or Sam or Tebow, but it's just a fact of life in the 24-hour sports news cycle that, you know, these guys are going to get coverage, especially in the middle of August or the beginning of August when there's not a whole lot going on.
I still say that Michael Sam, you know, got himself off on the wrong foot when he was even linked to the Oprah stuff. And when it came out that teams weren't, he wasn't upfront about what exactly his plans were with the documentary. So let's go back to that. You know, we looked at Jason Collins and how he handled his situation this year in the NBA. Outside of the initial coming out and signing, no one discussed Jason Collins because he went about it the right way, and he's a non-story. But from day one, it felt like, you know, from the outside looking in, that Michael Sam was doing this in order to get his name out there and to elevate himself above his seventh round status. And I can understand why teams would be turned off by that. And you know, if you know, truly focused on trying to make the St. Louis Rams, then there's no reason why he was also trying. There's no reason why he should have been trying to film a documentary in the process. So I think he got himself on the wrong foot. It's been quiet ever since then because, you know, training camp hasn't opened yet, but you know, training camp's starting to open this week and next week. And I think we will start to, especially after this comment this week, that we will start to see more eyes on Michael Sam, and I'm curious to see how he handles everything.
Yeah, I agree to a certain extent that the Oprah dalliance was a bad move off the top. You know, and when you talk about Jason Collins, you're right. He just went about the business of basketball. He's not a star player, and he didn't put himself in a position of being a quote-unquote player. You know, he wasn't out filming shows for Lifetime, or he wasn't, you know, on Wendy Williams every day, or, you know, he wasn't making a spectacle of himself with Michael Sam. And again, this is different between a young man and a grown man. You know, Michael Sam still is a very young man, and Jason Collins was someone who's, what, mid-30s, late-30s?
Yeah, he's old man.
Yeah, been a professional athlete he's for sure a long, age. Long time. So yeah, you know, so he grown in sex. He grown in sex. To a certain segment of the audience. Yeah. But, you know, he went about it the quote-unquote right way. And, you know, like we talked about with LeBron, I don't know if there's ever really a right way when you get situations like this, because it's almost uncharted territory with what Michael Sam was doing. So I can't fault him too much on the Oprah thing, but it was probably a red flag or a warning sign for a lot of teams that are like, you know, we just want to be about the business of playing football and winning games and get to the playoffs. And we don't need this guy with all these cameras and all these reporters and all this stuff that is a distraction from our goal.
How soon before the NFL culture shifts and where Sam is the bad guy and Dungy is the good guy? In terms of, I think at some point we're going to see a turn here where we'll have more people who are going to vocalize their thoughts, right or wrong, about Michael Sam, and I think, you know, Dungy's the easy target now because he's the first one to really come out and say it, but I think there are a lot more people on Dungy's side out there than Michael Sam.
Absolutely. I was just going to say, I think internally the culture is probably already on Dungy's side.
Yeah.
Of the argument, but you know, in terms of the public face of the NFL and of pro sports, you know, it's going to take time because this is a sport where being macho and being a man is kind of the utmost badge of honor. You know, you got guys walking around with concussions on the field that don't want to come out of the game. You know, my future mental health be damned. You know, you got this kind of atmosphere where during the Richie Incognito thing, you had more people siding with Richie Incognito than Jonathan Martin.
Which was crazy to me.
Yeah, granted, at the end, Jonathan Martin wasn't quite as sympathetic as he was when initially reported, but still, Richie Incognito was the bad guy in that story.
Yeah.
And Tony, I think Tony's catching a lot of flack, but I don't think he's catching it from inside the tent. I think he's catching it from, you know, the TMZs, the ESPNs, catching some friendly fire from his homeboy Sam Champion at NBC Sports. Like, you got the weatherman taking shots at you.
Yeah, well, we should point out the weatherman is openly gay, so he's got a dog in this fight, and that's, you know, I'm sure.
Are we really going to go there after the Michael Vick talk?
Oh, yeah, bad choice of words.
Oh, but yeah, in terms of what he's actually said, I think there's a part of society that likes to, well, there's a big part of society, especially when you get on social media, that likes to tear down icons or heroes. And Tony Dungy has been held up as, you know, a great example of an NFL coach and of a man, and he's very religious. And, you know, there's a segment of the audience that is extremely grating to. And they have a problem with someone openly expressing their views. You know, I mean, I'm not going to say Tony was right or Tony was wrong, but he was right by his belief system and the way that he would coach a team. But there's a lot of people that I think take delight in, oh, you said you thought this guy was so moral, you thought this guy was so right, but why is he being homophobic? Why is he being prejudiced towards Michael Sam? When I don't think that's the case at all.
Yeah. Hopefully, you know, by the time football season starts, this will blow over some.
Do the Rams play on NBC Sunday night?
Because
I do think you're right. It's going to blow away, but I do think Tony may have to address it that first broadcast, whether it's a Rams game or not, which probably won't be.
They don't play on they have one Monday Night Football game. They have an NFL Network game. No, but if there's a game you want to circle on your calendar, people, Saturday, August 23rd, St. Louis travels to Cleveland. Talked about a shit show. You got week three, which is usually the week you get the most time for your dress rehearsal. Well, yeah, your dress rehearsal, but then you also, that's almost time to clean house and cut roster. So
yeah.
I'm hoping for a Michael Sam sack to Johnny Manziel and the internet explodes.
Oh, yeah, this could be ugly. This could get real. Yeah, I think the best thing that Michael Sam can do, and he has done to his credit, is he hasn't addressed Tony Dungy's comments. Herm Edwards, I guess, earlier in the year had said that, you know, Sam brought issues to the table that he wouldn't want to deal with if he were still coaching. And Sam ignored those comments. So if you're Michael Sam, the best thing you can do is stay off of TV, stay off of Twitter, stay off of the radio, stay off of the newspaper, and put your head down and go to work and be about the business of making that team, because that's still not a guarantee.
Yeah, he's had a big hurdle. I mean, and it, you know, this could be a mute point in 4 weeks when he's not on the team and that's it. But yeah, he's had a big way to go to make that St. Louis Rams roster.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. And it's funny, like, the NFL is so... This is why the NFL is the number one sport in America. Like, even something that did like this, that should be... becomes a front page story, becomes a story that leads off Mike and Mike, And, you know, we're leading off the Kings of Sport with it. So congratulations, Roger Goodell.
You've done it again, Roger. You're going to move the draft to L.A. You're going to stretch this out to possibly 4 days. You're moving the combine. It's a 12-month sport, which is impressive.
Yeah, good for you, Roger. So that's going to do it for the A Block for segment one. We got a lot of stuff to talk about on today's show, Marcus. We've got racial unity in the WWE. We've got ratchetness to speak of.
Got a special guest.
I got a special guest on the way. So it's a lot of stuff. It won't be Keith Olbermann, though. I can tell you that right now.
No, it won't be. Bye, Felicia. It won't be. It won't be Keith.
Yeah, bye, Felicia. So we'll be back in just a second. Listen to some spots from our friends in the podcast world. And we'll be back with more Kings of Sport right after this.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
It's not just any day. It's Mr. Throwback Thursday.
Hey, everybody. You remember when hip-hop was full of dope MCs, fly DJs, and human beatboxes? We do, too. My name is Jamie Robinson, and people call me Mr. Throwback Thursday. And along with my co-host, Bill Winters, we take you back to that better time. So come join us every Throwback Thursday for some classic hip-hop discussion, a few tunes, and check in on some people you thought weren't even out there anymore. You can get us on iTunes, Stitcher, and always at our Facebook page at facebook.com/TheMrTBT, or just search for Mr. Throwback Thursday. We're the only one out there. And always remember, new school stale, old school fresh.
Sorry to keep you waiting. Now let's get back to the world's most dangerous sports show. It's the Kings of Sport. TheKingsOfSport.com. We are back on the Kings of Sport, powered by Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the latest in sports and pop culture articles and opinions. And speaking of opinions, this show is not one to shy away from getting into controversial topics, quote unquote. I mean, we just spent 20 minutes talking about Tony Dungy, so I figured we've already probably pissed off half of our audience. Why not piss off the other half? And we're going to talk some wrestling, and we have a special guest on the line. Brother Marcus, why don't you introduce this gentleman so we can get into some great conversation?
Yeah, our guest this week is a guy that I go back to. It's almost been 10 years now. He's an entertainment and then pop culture personality. He's the man behind alwaysalist.com. His name is John Murray. John, welcome to the Kings of Sport.
Man, it's so cool to hang out on the Kings of Sport. You know, I'm typically on TV talking about Justin Bieber and Miley Cyrus and a whole bunch of other stuff, but it's good to be able to talk professional wrestling. That makes me happy. I'm in my happy place today, fellas.
Yeah, and he's a huge wrestling fan, if you might not know. We actually, I've referenced the SummerSlam party multiple times on the podcast over the past year.
So this is the party where Alfred was locked out?
Yeah, I don't think you met. So we were once a show of three people, and Alfred was the other guy on the show who was at the hotel that night, and he didn't get into the party. But I was able to get in thanks to John and Omarosa. Jeez, I'm name dropping here. But during the party, we had several discussions with black talent. And
look, it sounds like they're towing Alberto Del Rio's car in the background.
I know. This is what happens when you do a show at 12:45 during the day. Oh, there we go. Cool. during the party, we had great chats with several of the black talent on the roster, including JTG at the time. And, over the last couple weeks now, we've had more of a discussion about race, thanks to a great story in The Atlantic about really how the company books certain black talent. So we just want to get your thoughts from the top. What did you think about the story itself, and what are your thoughts about how the WWE decides to book their black talent?
I think the story that Dion Barry did for The Atlantic was great. I think he really broke down the nuances of the history of the professional wrestler, the black professional wrestler, in a major way. I mean, you know, yes, this is sports fantasy for men. Yes, it's like a grown man soap opera on television with a bunch of action stars. But the reality is that they have used so many stereotypes to depict us, and not always the ones that are the most positive ones. And my only real issue with this story, and it's an issue that me and another professional wrestler we constantly debate about, is I kind of don't like the dismissal of Dwayne The Rock Johnson as a black man. You know, so often they give him a pass and they say, oh, well, he wore the WWE title, but he's Samoan. And I've interviewed The Rock, back during our days at AOL Black Voices, on the set of the movie The Rundown, which is one of his first big Hollywood films. And so one of the things that we talked about was race and how he viewed. Incidentally, the actress, her name just slipped my mind, who was his co-star in that movie, she didn't want to have any discussions of race. But when I asked The Rock about, how did he view himself and race as a professional wrestler, his quote went along something like, I'm a black man, I'm proud to be a black man, I'm happy to be a black man, getting the opportunities that I get in the business, and I'm glad to be breaking down barriers where people don't necessarily see me and see race. So, I mean, that was a quote from him. So I know, a lot of people say, well, he's Samoan and part of his heritage is Samoan. He identifies that way. That wasn't how he identified himself to me. So I think disregarding the fact that he was a black man who wore the WWE title, for me, that'd be my only issue with the article. But the other 90% of what he said, I think, was right on the mark.
I totally agree with that. And I think the actress you were talking about was Rosario Dawson.
Yeah.
Yes, Rosario Dawson. I asked her specifically something about, just Hollywood diversity or something along those lines. And she made it very plain to me that she wanted to have no discussions of race, and she didn't think in the terms of race. And it's so funny because most of her career, she identified as Latina. And then when they did the movie of the Broadway show Rent, she was on the cover of Jet Magazine. So I was like, wait a minute, what just happened here? So a woman who didn't want to discuss race and, you've been a quiet Latina your whole career, is now on the cover of Jet. I'm confused, but that's a whole other talk show.
It must be nice to just flip the racial switch, like, today I'm going to be black.
Yes.
But getting back to the article, I've heard Dion on a couple shows, in terms of addressing that point with The Rock, and The Rock is kind of problematic in a way because it is a good mark for the WWE in terms of their first black WWF/WWE champion. But it's also like The Rock could have been Chinese, Mexican, Puerto Rican, whatever. With that talent set, you'd have been an idiot not to give him the title.
Absolutely.
He's a transcendent star that transcends race. And I think that my issue with the WWE in terms of the title and just the booking in general is when you got a transcendent star like Rock, Austin, somebody at that level, sure, go put the rocket on their back, shoot them to the moon. But where are the average black guys that get to ascend to those heights? Where are our misses? You know what I mean?
Exactly. And I co-sign on that totally. When you put the machine behind somebody that has the skill set and the wherewithal to become The Rock, because remember how he started. Rocky Maivia was getting booed every week. Nobody liked him. You know, he started as a babyface, but they were booing him. So then they had to, you know, put him in the Nation of Domination and turn him heel. Like, it wasn't a success story at the beginning. But they put the machine behind him, and it worked. And, you know, there are other guys there who deserve the machine. I mean, when you put a little bit of energy behind a Mark Henry, look how the crowd responds to him. Remember when Kofi had that whole run with Randy Orton?
Yes.
The first time? It was a good run. Like, they should have sent him to, like, Money in the Bank, gave him the suitcase, and allowed him to win very much like the Miz did. So there's so much you can do if you actually just put the machine behind some of these guys and test them out. You know, I think there's this mindset that the black wrestlers can't sell merchandise. Well, anybody can sell if you create the demand for them.
You know, when it comes to the issues that the company's having, I think it starts with creative and the lack of diversity in the back for the writers. I know you have relationships with wrestlers. Have they ever addressed any concerns about going to work and not seeing a fair representation of them on the writing staff?
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny. One, I have to always credit TNA superstar MVP for kind of reigniting my interest in professional wrestling. You know, I went through a phase in my career where I was doing 5 miles a year, and I just couldn't keep up. So somewhere like in the mid-2000s, I kind of lost touch with my professional wrestling fascination. And so he... WWE and The View did a storyline together, and he went to the BET Awards with Sherry Shepherd. And so I knew we were going to be hanging out with him that weekend. I was excited about meeting him. But to prepare for him coming out to L.A. and hanging out with us, I started watching Raw and SmackDown just to kind of get reacclimated so we could have some conversation. And so spending that weekend with him, you know, him just kind of schooling me on some of the business of wrestling and us having really smart dialogue about professional wrestling. It opened me up in a completely different way to it because now I wasn't just a fan of the product that was in the ring. I started to appreciate the business of it. I started to understand the behind the scenes of it and a lot of the technicality and the maneuvering that we don't necessarily really, really understand. I mean, you can kind of gauge some of it now because the internet has kind of taken the curtain up a little bit and given us a level of insight. But there were still some aspects of it that he kind of broadened my horizons on. And so that's how I fell back in love with this thing and really, really just reconnected with it. And so because of him, I've been able to build some really cool friendships with the Shelton Benjamins and the Kofi Kingstons and the JTGs of the business, Titus O'Neil. And so, you know, I hear their stories, I hear their experiences. I mean, these guys are some of the best in the business. I mean, they all bring very unique skill sets. They all do what they do. All of them clearly would like their shot, you know, at the top of the roster, love, you know, wearing a heavyweight title. And just doing some things that are smarter. A lot of them have great ideas. They have really unique approaches and things that they would like to see as far as character evolution and evolving their storylines and stuff like that. I don't think they're always able to. So, you know, sometimes some of them have good runs as we see. We get excited thinking something's going to good happen, something good is going to happen for them, and then you look up and the next week they're jobbing again. So, you know, I don't want to speak on behalf of any of them because, you know, my personal conversations with them are pretty much that. But I think just from a general aspect, I think anybody watching the show for the most part would say that we could tell that most of the black wrestlers would like to see an evolution in their creative aspect of their characters.
Now, to piggyback off of that story, I was listening to another show where MVP was addressing the Sherry Shepherd angle. And I guess one of the things was that BET had approached him and Sherry about presenting an award. And he took it to the WWE, and they were like, well, why would you want to do that? Because they did not understand that black folks watch wrestling too. You know, and, yeah. And they didn't see the value of having one of your guys in a position where you're going to have a lot of eyes, most of them African-American, watching this particular award show. And I think instead it was Idris Elba. Got the spot to present with Sherry Shepherd, and, you know, it like, that's a wasted opportunity.
It was a wasted opportunity. And if you really think about it, MVP probably is the poster child for somebody who really could have been the heir to The Rock. You know, when he went through that whole phase where WWE was punishing him, and they were literally punishing him in real life, and so they had him jobbing every week, it made him a superstar. The audience then kind of turned on the writing and, like, really got behind him and started cheering him. And ultimately, he went from somebody who they had going out there losing every week, he was on this losing streak, to he became somebody who, you know, was a bona fide star. I mean, in that season, they could have probably taken him to the top of the roster and made some major moves with him. And, you know, he's commercially friendly. You know, he had a gimmick that was sellable. Little kids would have been wearing their big old medallions and their little jumpsuits to the ring, I mean, to the matches and stuff. It could have worked. But again, another example of a great lost opportunity. So when he finally went to WWE and said, you know what, I want my release, I want to go and live my Japanese dream and do this thing over here, you know, because, you know, he had a solid relationship with some of the behind-the-scenes folks, oh, with an open door, if you, you know, ever want to entertain coming back, let's revisit it.
You mentioned TNA, and they've decided to form a quote-unquote black stable with MVP, Kenny King, and Bobby Lashley. But to everyone's surprise, it's not a race thing. It's just three black guys who are attached together. That leads us to Monday Night Raw this past week, where we saw the formation, or it looks like, of a black stable within the company again, featuring Big E, Kofi, and Xavier Woods. A, do you think this is a direct response to Deion's story? And B, do you think this is the right call, and are you concerned about which direction this might head?
Well, okay, one, I can say that I've been kind of aware that WWE was working on this whole black faction for a period of time. But you know how the entertainment thing is. It's about who can cross the finish line first. So as it pertains to TV viewing, we've seen that TNA was able to introduce what they were doing well before now. I think the cool thing about TNA's execution of it is that, you know, MVP came in as a businessman. He came in as the new backer of TNA, you know. I mean, he's pretty much playing the Triple H role over there, which I think is pretty phenomenal because TNA clearly is their counter-programming against WWE. They see there's a lack of diversity. They see that they're not serving their diverse audience, their urban audience, their African-American audience. And so they, you know, clearly have thrust Kenny King to the top of the ladder there. You know, Bobby Lashley is getting this big push. He just had the belt on him. And MVP is playing the Triple H character. I think it was very ambitious of them, but the people are responding to it. It's working. And, you know, every week I get on social media, I see there's a lot of chatter and stuff about it. And that's what this stuff is supposed to do. You're supposed to love it, you're supposed to hate it, but if you're sounding off about it, that means you're engaged in what they're presenting to you, and then, ultimately the product is doing what it's supposed to do. I'm intrigued by what WWE is doing. Anytime they're putting the black guys on TV and giving them some camera time, I'm always excited. I'm even more excited when it's a smart storyline, when it's a good match where you can really see them perform, and particularly if one of my favorites wins. I mean, everybody knows I'm a Kofi Kingston guy. If I was a wrestler, I'd probably wear John Morrison's old clothes and wrestle like Kofi Kingston. That would be me. Because, you know, I'm a little more of a rock star than Kofi is, but I just think Kofi is cool. You know, he reminds me of a young Ricky Steamboat in many ways. And I love what he does. I always felt like, you know, if The Miz can carry the WWE title, you don't get much more commercially friendly than Kofi. I felt like, you know, he should have had his shot. And I know he's still a younger guy, and there's still a lot more out there for him. But I'm intrigued by what they're going to do. I just hope it doesn't become, you know, this new faction. They start dressing up like old school Crime Time or something. That's going to make me mad if it goes in some real wacky direction.
Yeah, to me, I'm hopeful, but I'm not holding my breath in terms of the WWE creative always being able to tell a story that is nuanced and subtle, which is what I think TNA has done in the fact that these aren't three angry black guys. These are three angry guys who happen to be black. You know what
exactly.
I mean? I think that's a big distinction, and I hope that we don't get from Woods and Big E and Kofi, all three guys who I'm big fans of, I hope we don't get, what was it, a couple years ago when Crime Time was in there and you had Shelton Benjamin as, you know, kind of looking at these dudes like, what are you doing? You're being out here being buffoons and embarrassing yourself, embarrassing the race. And Shelton was played up as the angry black guy who was mad at the shucking and jiving black guys, and neither group of black guys got over.
Exactly. And Shelton is, I mean, Shelton is another example. And, you know, Marcus referenced earlier, I'm not on air then when we were talking about it, but last year when we were at the SummerSlam party, I stepped to Triple H. First of all, Triple H and Stephanie were amazingly nice.
Yes.
And for the most part, everybody at that party was really, really friendly. And so, you know, I talked to him about being a fan, and, you know, I think they were surprised that someone who's on TV doing commentary on networks like CNN and syndicated talk shows and stuff was a big fan of the brand. That was first and foremost. And so because of that, as soon as I said hello, they all wanted to talk and hear what I had to say. So when I started telling him, you know, some of the people that I'd like to see come back, and, you know, Shelton was on the top of my list, you know, he told us that, you know, well, it's the youth movement. We're focusing on youth, and it's all about the youth. And Marcus's first thing he said was, okay, Rob Van Dam, really? And so, you know, it was nothing he could really say to that. And then, you know, then shortly thereafter, we see, you know, Road Dogg, Jesse James, and Triple H's other best friend came back and got the tag team title. So it's, you know, it's about what Triple H wants and who he likes. And Shelton Benjamin really could have came back, particularly when they had all these guys that were injured. Sheamus was out. Alberto Del Rio had an injury. I mean, you know, CM Punk had left. Like, you bring in somebody like that who can still deliver in the ring, who can still get over with the crowd, bring them back as a mega heel, let them work real good, and it could be effective. But, you know, for some odd reason, I guess they have the ones that they love, that they adore, and they'd rather just bring out, you know, Papa Shango. Well, what's his, what is the character he likes to come back as now?
Godfather.
Godfather.
Yeah.
You know, and have him come out there for, you know, do a 2-minute spot in the ring and whatever.
Did you have a chance to catch Mark Henry's appearance on HuffPost Live?
I did not. I saw him when he did an interview with the guy who's on Hot 97.
Rosenberg.
And I thought that was such a great interview. I mean, it was a long interview, but I watched all of it. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say Mark Henry's become like a really good friend. Like, Mark just started hitting me up and was like, "Yo, I think it's cool that you like what we do for a living." And so, he's a funny. Use a whole lot of words, and he's very much like Ron Simmons, but he's a good dude. Like, I like Mark a lot, so I had to mention that.
Yeah, I would check that out. It felt like he was sent by the company, which I understand. I'm sure he's in a tough spot because, you know, he's still getting paid by them. But I think Henry is a guy who would make sense in this new faction. But, you know, I guess if they wanted to go the safe route and not make it a quote-unquote race issue and make it more about a jobber issue, then do you see like a certain non-black talent that they could plug into that group?
Well, I guess Heath Slater would be the ideal character. You know, it's funny, before they fired the other two guys from the Three Man Band, I like the Three Man Band
and Gender. Yeah.
Yes, I always felt like Gender was the oddball for me, in a three-man band, but I always felt like JTG should have been the third component of that band, because every good band needs a rapper now. Come on, what pop band now doesn't have a rapper? Like, in the age of Macklemore and all of that, JTG would have been ideal for that band. This is my opinion, but I'm not on the writing staff. And if the writing staff happens to be listening to this today, I feel like WWE operates in a bubble. And they get in their own little lane. They got all these guys who've been doing it for years, and they know everything. They're the authority on everything. I think they need to open up their creative process. You know, I think they should do some focus groups. Bring in some cool cats like us. Come on, fly us into Connecticut and sit down and let's have a dialogue with some people from the outside world, some people who respect what you do but could really broaden your horizons and challenge you to think a little differently. Because clearly we all hear what the fans are saying, because we're all fans. You see what the comments are on social media and stuff like that. And I know sometimes they try to program against what the fans want. I guess that's their way of keeping folks engaged. But I think at some point they do have to shift in a creative direction that works with the folks. And when you do that, you can end up with a new CM Punk. You know, you can end up with a storyline or some character you want to connect with.
Yeah, I agree. We had Court Bauer, former WWE writer, on the show, and that was one of his complaints. You know, I think he said, like, during his tenure, The only black face in the room was Patrice O'Neal, and he didn't last too long up there. Rest in peace, Patrice. People hit me up all the time. They're like, do you feel that the WWE is racist? Is that your complaint? And I tell them, you know, all the time, absolutely not. I don't think that Vince McMahon is racist. I don't think that the creative team is racist. I do think that there is a culture created, like you were alluding to, where it's okay for Michael Hayes to call somebody a nigger and still have a job. Where it's okay for Gail Kim, was on a podcast recently, and she was like, somebody just walked up to her on the production staff and just called her a chink. And nothing happened. Where you have so much of the same thought, so much of the same experience, so much of the same background in charge of all these workers, you know, creative lives, and to some extent their financial lives, because the bigger the push, the bigger the paycheck. And, you know, where is your Latino writer? Where is your black writer? Where is your young writer? You know, why are all your writers, you know, in their 40s and 50s? You know, where is the diversity in the room? And I know that's a buzzword, but, you know, diversity would not be the worst thing ever for, you know, that crew up there.
Yeah, there is an executive there who I won't name because I don't want to put on the spot. She and I have a really great relationship, and she's always just pushing the boundaries and really trying to make them, because I agree with you. I don't believe the WWE is a racist company. I think they are sometimes an ignorant company. They lack culture. They don't understand our culture and other cultures. They've been in a bubble for so long. And here's the thing. These cats travel the world probably 250 days out of the year. I mean, most of them are only home on like a Wednesday and a Thursday on a good week. And so, you know, so what you've seen the world, so what you've been to various cultures, so what you've been to all, 50 states and the other two locales, you don't see anything. You know what I'm saying? They get off a plane, they go to a venue, they set up a ring, they go through storylines, they might go to a bar afterwards, and it's on to the next city. And so they don't get the time to meet and really engage with people to expand their horizons, expand their thinking, and to understand that you're still using stereotypes that the writers were using in the 70s, and it's time to let that playbook go.
You mentioned the bubble. I mean, that starts with Triple H. The number of times I've interviewed him, and, you know, WWE PR will say, okay, what do you want to discuss? And if there's any topic that has to do directly outside wrestling, they'll usually say, hey, look, you know, to be honest, Triple H really doesn't follow what goes on outside of wrestling. Like, if you're going to ask me about, even if it's sports, and I think Vince McMahon's the same way from what I've heard, they don't know what's going on at all. All they know is wrestling. So, you know, the fact that that didn't surprise me that the writing staff is the same way. If the, you know, the two faces of the company are so locked in on this product that they don't know, you know, what's going on in the outside world.
I think every other brand and every other successful company out here, and sometimes the other companies do it so much that it works in the opposite direction. But I think everybody else out here is doing some form of a focus group. You know, they're bringing in outside entities, seeking their opinions, and really trying to understand, you know, just all the nuances of supply and demand. And I think if WWE just began to do that in some capacity, I think it would help the overall brand. And I also think they really need to look at adding a diversity position there. I mean, all these corporations, you know, have somebody that's vice president of diversity, marketing, and affairs, or something along those lines. And I think they need to have someone in a position like that that can help them and check them when sometimes they're pushing the boundaries, doing things that are a little stereotypical, and also helping to enhance and create additional visibility outside of the ring and outside of just sports entertainment for their wrestlers of color.
Do you think, similar to Saturday Night Live, where they felt the pressure to hire a female black talent, do you think we'll have a publicized black hire to the creative team by the end of the year?
I would like to hope so. And I would hope that if they did it, they did it with the intent on allowing that person to be effective. So you could create the position and bring the person on, but if you don't really allow them to do what they're there to do, then you're just working against yourself anyway. Like, don't just fill the chair just to fill the chair, but allow them to also do the work. Allow them to also contribute and be impactful in their decisions and their contributions to the network.
Yeah, that's the big thing for me. You know, it's all well and good to have diversity in the writing room, but if they don't have a voice, then I think it's just a display. It's just a show. You know, Vince can be like, I told you we got one. But, you know, give this person some authority. You know, allow this person to speak up and, you know, give fresh ideas, give different ideas. You know, explain why in this situation Xavier Woods would say this instead of, you know, shucking and jiving and dancing wearing Lionel Richie jacket. You know,
explain why we don't need Big E Langston in the ring preaching like a Baptist preacher. We don't talk like that anymore. Have you heard Bishop Dix on TV? We're a little more eloquent in our delivery.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, why is Big E Langston sounding like the preacher from Coming to America? Like, I don't need that every week.
Why is he sounding like Slick back in the 80s?
I love Slick.
Wrestling is in a time war. But I just have to say this. I Shelton Benjamin, before he went to Japan, invited me up to Baltimore, because I'm based in Washington, D.C., to come to a live Ring of Honor match. And it changed my life. You know, I don't get Ring of Honor on my television here, so I don't get to watch it unless I'm in a city that airs it. But it was some of the best professional wrestling that I've ever seen. And I know that I think they're owned by, like, Sinclair Broadcasting, and they're only in cities that Sinclair has a network. But if they end up with a cable channel, like, I feel like they'd be a good fit for a network like True TV. If they end up with a cable platform, they could really give WWE a run for their money, because it's a quality product. Those guys are great in the ring. It's the wrestling fans' wrestling show. You know what I'm saying? Because it's athleticism at its finest.
I think it's what TNA fans wanted TNA to be, but instead TNA a lot of times ends up coming off like a second-rate version of WWE.
Yeah, because they're still wearing full costumes, and TNA, as much as I'm trying to get with it because I like the fact that they're embracing diversity, some of the characters and some of the storylines are still a bit hard for me to follow.
Yeah, I think in a perfect world, if they could find a way to take the talent and ROH and give it TNA's production value, and somehow the two companies merged, then I think you'd have a legit number two company to compete with the WWE. Because my biggest issue with ROH, besides not being able to watch it here, is just it's so dark and it's filmed poorly. But, you know, if you take TNA looks great every week. The talent in the ring is hit and miss, but it looks great. If you combine two and you had ROH on, you know, Spike TV, then I think that could really take off.
I agree with you. And let me tell you, like, being at the Ring of Honor match, the energy is good. I mean, those people come with an anticipation of having a good time. I sat next to a guy who was able to kind of just kind of coach me and, like, give me backstory and stuff. So it was kind of like having Rosetta Stone right next to me. He was talking the ROH language to me. But it was easy to follow. Like, I mean, I really connected with a lot of them. And I don't know about you, but I'm ready to see Jay Lethal get his shot in one of the big leagues. Jay Lethal is the most underrated wrestler in the game right now. He is so, he can play characters. That whole Black Machismo thing he does, like Randy Macho Man Savage, is brilliant. If you've never seen him and Ric Flair go back and forth,
amazing.
Yeah.
Get on YouTube and find that clip. He really bring him over to WWE and add him to the faction. He's just that good.
Wow. He's still young. What is he, like, 24, 25?
He's young. He might be in the latter part of his 20s now, but just a cool dude.
He's 28.
He's great in the ring. And somebody else who is exceptional, he's in the latter part of his 30s, but he still wrestles like he's 21 years old, is Caprice Coleman. It defies me that Caprice Coleman is not a superstar, because in the ring, he's doing stuff that is far... put Caprice Coleman in a match with Dolph Ziggler, and we're going to have good television.
That absolutely is a great point. Before we let you go, make sure you plug your stuff. Where can people find you?
You can find me online at alwaysalist.com. That's my entertainment and lifestyle site. And to keep up with me, my TV appearances, and all the other stuff that I'm doing, you can hit me on my personality site, johnmurray.com. That's JAWNMURRAY.com. And my social media is pretty much the same thing, at John Murray on Twitter and Facebook. Actually, Facebook is John Murray World, and Instagram is at John Murray as well. So, holler at your boy.
And will you be making the SummerSlam party cameo this year?
yo, so I don't think my travel schedule is going to allow me to get to L.A. for SummerSlam. And I'm not so happy about that, because I have to say, anybody who knows me knows that I've been really blessed to have the opportunity to interview some of the biggest stars known to man. And one of the reasons that I've been successful at covering pop culture and as an entertainment journalist in the business is I never get starstruck. And so I went to the SummerSlam party. I was hanging out with Omarosa.
You're like the 12-year-old kid, man.
I was like a 12-year-old. Like, I've never, and Omarosa kept looking at me saying, I've never seen you like this before. But I was so hype, and like, when I met Jim Ross, I was like, you know, he was drunk, so he was so incoherent. But I was so hype, and, you know, I got to really kind of, that was the first time I really got to talk and kind of dap it up with Mark Henry. And, you know, after that, me and JTG became friends. We ended up going to Roscoe's like twice that weekend. So it was a good time, man. You know, it was so cool seeing Brodus Clay playing that trick on Eva.
Eva Marie, yeah, we've told that story, I think. And I told the guys off the air about the other story that can't be shared on air.
But you told me about the one where we pretended I was a movie producer and she was so ready to like audition for me. You gotta love it. So, yeah, we had a good time at that party. And my girl Joy Lynn over at WWE arranged for me to be there. It took very good care of us that night.
Well, I will try to represent on your honor this year. I'm assuming they're doing one. I know they're cutting back on some of the extra stuff this year for SummerSlam, but I'm assuming the party will be a go.
You're assuming you're going to get an invite, Marcus, after all this discussion we had in the last
month. I gotta, you know.
Look, the coolest thing will be if you get to that party, Marcus, and Sting is there. That'll be the highlight of your night.
You're talking to the biggest Sting fan in Nate, so he would
kill
me.
Don't get me started, man. That's a whole other 20-minute combo right there. what'd you think of, real quick, what'd you think about the 2K Sports ad last week?
Oh, I didn't see it. Last week I was traveling on Monday, so I missed when they rolled that part out.
Yeah, you got to go on YouTube and check it out. They probably have it up on WWE.com and 2KSports.com. But it's some of the best production that Sting has seen in years.
Well, the cool thing is that his participation in this video was enough to bring him to the company that he had never worked for.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it says about how great this project was and how important it was for him to be as a part of it. So I'm excited to see what he's going to do now. You know, I hope they use him smartly. You know, it's one thing when a wrestler starts getting about his age and they still try to, you know, deliver those long matches because, you know, as much as a lot of folks wanted to see Undertaker streak continue, them SummerSlam matches were becoming tough to watch.
WrestleMania, yeah. The WrestleMania match was tough to watch.
Ooh, they were getting tough to watch.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that Lesnar match was, like, if Undertaker won that Lesnar match, I think we would have all been talking about, wow, that match was kind of average for Taker.
They would have had to come up with some type of geriatric theme for next year. It would have been like, you know, the wheelchair storyline or something. There's just no way he was going to be able to continue to deliver the way he has delivered in the past. As much of a name that he brings to the show and as much excitement as there was in seeing him at WrestleMania every year, physically the man just wasn't, he just couldn't do it anymore.
That's why last week on the show we were talking about Sting ideas, and my idea is instead of doing the one-on-one match between two guys that are, you know, in their 50s, why not just do a tag match with the two of them against the Wyatt family and have that be, you know, Sting and Taker's last match, and they can, you know, ride off at the sunset as a team.
You know what? That's not a bad idea. See, but you know what? It's too logical for the WWE. Good ideas never manifest onto the television and into the ring.
I think it was a good idea to give you a call, John. I was doing some research for the show, and I saw that you attended Norfolk State, man.
Yes, I went to an HBCU. Grew up watching A Different World on television, so I wanted my black college experience.
You were looking for Hillman, but when Hillman wasn't available, you were like, I'd go to NSU.
I settled on NSU, and I had a good time down there. And we used to go over to the Norfolk Scope and catch house shows. You know, WWE was hooking me up with tickets even when I was just a young college reporter. So, and WCW, I got some photos with Disco Inferno and the Iron Sheik. He did a signing in Norfolk at a Walmart, and I went.
Yeah, I'm out here in Newport News, so that's right in my backyard.
Oh yeah, Newport News. There's a Cheddar's out there that we used to go to and get cheap drinks when we weren't supposed to be drinking.
Out by the mall.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I know that Cheddar. I thought there was something about you I like, man.
Well, cool, man. We definitely have to do this again.
Yeah, you got an open invite anytime you want to come back and talk wrestling, talk pop culture, whatever you want to talk about. You got a spot here on the Kings of Sport.
Look, let's give them like 6 weeks, 7 weeks to evolve this whole black faction and see what's going to happen with it.
We'll
see if they throw a few non-Negroes in the mix, and then we'll come on and analyze it again.
Or at least Otunga. Bring Otunga back.
Where is David Otunga?
You know, so David Otunga is still employed by them because he's a great, apparently, WWE ambassador. They use him for a lot of corporate appearances and a lot of promotional work. But for whatever reason, I don't think he is 100% committed to wrestling again. I saw him last summer at Bishop T.D. Jakes' Mega Fest. It was so funny because, I was chilling backstage and I saw Jennifer and I was like, is David with you? She was like, yeah, he's in my dressing room. I'm going there. So I was all excited. Like, yo. So we got to actually sit and talk a little bit. Nice, nice guy. And I asked him, I said, man, I miss you in the ring. I miss what you was doing. And he was like, yeah, I'm just not sure, man. So, when they start saying they're not sure, you never know what's going to happen. But I do know that WWE keeps him around as an ambassador because he's apparently really good, as being one of the faces of WWE when they have to have him do corporate events and stuff like that.
That's good work if you can get it. He doesn't have to take bumps and he gets the check.
There you go.
Yeah. Just go to the gym, put on the suit, and go do a couple of interviews.
That's the type of job I need, Marcus.
There you go. I'll try to work on that.
All right. Thanks again, John, and we'll holler at you down the road, man.
Appreciate y'all.
All right.
That's John Murray. We're the Kings of Sport, and we'll be back right after this.
What's your one-stop home for your pop culture needs? Of course, PlaceToBeNation.com. We have everything you could ask for when it comes to pop culture. Now first, wrestling. We're definitely your hookup for all show recaps, including Raw, SmackDown, Impact, Ring of Honor, all of WWE's other programs as well. We have previews, live blogs, breakdowns for all WWE and UFC pay-per-views. You want sports? No problem. PlaceToBeNation has extensive articles on football, basketball, MMA, boxing, and baseball. From Andrew Reich's history lessons to the return of the hack to the Cowboys call, we have the best and comprehensive sports knowledge and opinions. With a loaded staff of hardcore pop culture writers, we also specialize in comics, TV, music, movie pieces. Of course, you can't forget Jen and Justin's journey through the 90s. You want podcasts? Well, look no further than Place to Be Nation, the home for the best catalog and variety of shows you'll find anywhere on the net. There's the Place to Be podcast, where the big boys play, the Brad and Chad show, Wrestling with the Past, Titans of Wrestling, Goodwill Wrestling, Richard and the Mailman, Grapple Talk, and the Kings of Sport with our good friend Nate Milton. Want to take a second to thank our supporters and ask you to check out their great sites. Graham Cawthon and the History of WWE.com, a complete archive of wrestling shows throughout history. Also our friend Dave at TWFNews.com, your home for wrestling news updates and great conversation. Also check out PiledriverWrestling.net for all the latest wrestling news and the home of the great Old School Wrestling Review podcast and much more. And while you're at it, if you want to chat with fellow fans about wrestling's past and present, check out Scott Keith's blog at rspwfaq.com. So for everything you need, your pop culture fix, check out PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in the pop culture world.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at Facebook.com/TheKingsOfSport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
We are back on the Kings of Sport. Shout out to John Murray for joining us in the last segment. We had a lot of heavy topics today, Marcus. We started off with Tony Dungy and the controversy surrounding him. Then we spoke once again about race in the WWE. I'm starting to think like we're the show of record when it comes to race in the WWE.
I think so. If there's going to be like a WWE Network recap show on the weekend race, I think we're it, right?
Yeah, we got to be at least in the top three candidates for that spot.
We're better than Rosenberg and Shoemaker. No,
yeah.
No offense to Chief Heat, but
they did have a good show with MVP and Gail Kim. I think it was last week or the week before.
Last week.
Yeah, and so yeah, I listen to them sporadically just because sometimes I like the show, other times you know it varies.
Here's my weekly Alfred mention. Peter Rosenberg is their Alfred, and you know, Alfred in doses is great, but Rosenberg, a lot of Rosenberg is not great. So
yeah, and then Alfred works when you have much like Vince Russo, when you have the filter, when there's three of us, Alfred can shine. But if you're getting straight, unadulterated, pure Kanawha,
yeah, it's a lot. It can be a lot to handle.
You don't want to overdose on the nastiness.
No.
So speaking of nasty situations, I thought we were going to talk about something fun here in Second Floor Market. Some good ratchetness. Thought we were going to talk maybe some Kanye, maybe some Cat Williams. Some funny stuff. But no. Once again, we're going to talk about that man, Floyd Money Mayweather.
We are. I think we owe it to the people. Because we did discuss him last week before this Deadspin story came out. And it would be a little irresponsible if we didn't address this Deadspin story, just since we did discuss him last week. So by now you've probably seen it. It's a week old, but it's still an important topic, an important story to read. And basically the story lays out Floyd Mayweather's history of domestic violence from the very start to the very current. And, you know, it's something that we've all known has happened. I mean, it's no surprise. But when you see it all in one story and you read it, it's pretty alarming, don't you think?
It's kind of like the media, you know, and I don't want to point fingers here, but it's almost like there's been a complicit agreement that, you know, there will be times when we address, you know, your history with women, but for the most part, we're not going to talk about it, and it really doesn't get brought up until you get articles like this, or was the one fight with a guy like, he's a woman beater, man.
Yeah.
He beats women. Like, unless something like that happens to initiate the conversation, that's usually not something that's discussed when it comes to talking about Floyd Mayweather. And so I think you posted the article on our Facebook page, facebook.com/kingsofsport, for anybody who hasn't read it. But, you know, you made the point, and I agree that you can't look at Floyd as just a boxer once you finish reading that article.
Yeah, I mean, I'm someone who is a fan of Floyd's craft in the ring. You know, I've interviewed Floyd in the past. He's been pleasantly fine, but it, you know, for me to say I'm going to go out and buy you know, a TMT hat and root for Mayweather when he fights in September, I'm not really in the business of rooting for boxers one way or the other, but it's a lot. I mean, it goes back to his first incident in 2001, before his fight with Diego Corrales. It's that the incident that most people didn't know about, involving the father of one of his baby mothers, that happened. So he beat up a male somewhere in there. You know, all to the publicized stuff that you've heard about from, you know, his jail time and prison stints and stuff. But yeah, it's the timing of this was right after the Rousey comment. I don't know if it was associated with that, but the timing is weird because it happened pretty much the same day that the Rousey stuff came out. And this is also the time, last week he was also promoting the Marcos Maidana rematch in September. I don't know how often this topic came up during those press tours last week. I wasn't paying attention. I'm sure not that often, as also pointed out in the story that, you know, Floyd tends to get somewhat favorable media coverage. And why that is, I don't know. You know, he's a charismatic guy. And also when you're talking about an industry like the media, especially boxing, you're talking about a mostly male industry. And, you know, if there were more women voices in the media room. Someone who comes to mind in a different sport is Karen Bryant, who's a fixture in MMA. If there's more, you know, Karen Bryants of the world that were covering boxing, then maybe this is a discussion or a topic that would come up more. But yeah, it's, you know, at some point we've come to accept what he's done in the past. We're not celebrating Floyd. Well, I think we do. We don't celebrate Floyd Mayweather as, you know, the felon, but we're quick to celebrate Floyd Mayweather as the boxer.
Yeah, and I think that, ironically, first of all, it was ironic with the Corrales deal because, you know, Floyd Mayweather in that fight, leading up to that fight, was positioned as the champion of women. You know, because he took a stand against Corrales, who was having his own legal issues at the time, you know, in terms of domestic violence with his wife. And Floyd was like, you know, I'm going to do this for all the women out there. You know, this is reprehensible. Little did we know at the time what was, you know, right around the corner. And, you know, this just reading the article, it not to make it equal or the same crime, but it almost reminded me of when the Penn State stuff was going on with Jerry Sandusky and all that information came out and you read just the litany of crimes against this dude, and it made you sick to your stomach. When you read this Deadspin article and you just see what Floyd has, you know, has done in his past, it's like, it's hard to reconcile the champion boxer and the guy that the media does act favorably towards. And I think part of that is because Floyd plays the game well. You know, he's a quote machine. He is somebody that you can either like or you can like to hate, and he plays both roles pretty well. And it's like, I don't know why the media. Well, I can see why the media gives him a pass. My bigger thing is the fans. You know, we had somebody post on our Facebook page after you posted the article that basically put a list of the top 10 paid athletes or something like that. And he was like, Floyd is the king of sports because he's the most paid boxer. And then, you know, the other stuff doesn't matter. And it's like, really?
Yeah, and this is where Morgan would be great on this topic. But I think when it comes to the fans, at the end of the day, boxing, it's a racial sport. Whether we want to agree with it or not, a lot of times, you know, we're talking about the quote-unquote black boxer versus, you know, the Puerto Rican or the white guy or the Mexican guy. And I think Mayweather is a guy who it's easy to unite the black community or black boxing fans when it comes to certain high-profile fights. For example, De La Hoya, you know, I think most black people were siding with Floyd in that fight. And yeah. I think that's where part of the past comes from, is because when it comes to those fights, you don't see many Mayweather fights where he's fighting another black guy. Whether that's part of the division or it just worked out that way, but I'm trying to think of the last one that comes. Well, I guess Mosley would be the last one that comes to mind.
Yeah, Sugar Shane.
You know, and Shane Mosley is not a boxer that is the black community is going to ride for. Just to be honest, he doesn't have that support. So it was, you know, I think most people were siding with Floyd in that fight. So I think that's part of. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say part of it is that. And it's a weird thing because on one hand, I think there's a positive aspect to it. But on the other hand, I think that there's a blindness and some naivete to it, in that the black community can be very protective of its stars. And I think part of that stems from the past and the history of America and the history of sports journalism, where there's a lot of piling on black athletes. And I think, you know, the OJ thing is a perfect encapsulation of that. You know, I think that if you talk to any black guy or black woman one-on-one and said, A, do you think he did it? B, do you think, you know, he's worthy of being held up as a hero? They'd probably tell you he probably did it and he's not a hero. But when you get a group that has been kind of piled on and given the short shrift of things in the past, it's like, you know, hey, we can talk about OJ, but I'll be damned if I'm going to let you talk about OJ. Yeah. And I think the same thing goes when you talk about Floyd. It's like, yeah, he may be an asshole, but he's our asshole. And, you know, we're not going to let you, you know, drag his name through the mud.
Yeah. It's a complicated issue. You know, the real test would be 2 months from now when this fight rolls around and if this story is still on people's radars. But I think he's going to sell a million pay-per-views either way, regardless of the story. I think, you know, the same people who are against the story will probably, you know, tune into the fight out of curiosity. So I think the timing, the story came out during fight week, I think it might have generated even more buzz, but I think it did a good amount of bringing awareness to who the true Floyd Mayweather actually is.
Right. And then, you also get into, can you appreciate the talent and still, you know, think that what the man did is despicable? And I think that's a place where sometimes it's hard for sports fans, which is Alfred always used to remind us, is short for fanatic, where you ride so hard for a team or for a guy that you let things slide. And it's like, no, Floyd Mayweather is at once one of the best boxers we've ever seen and a pretty despicable human being.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, he hasn't addressed it. I don't know if he, you know, I'm sure between now and then he's going to find something to gin up to a donation, an appearance, something to sort of clean house and you know, save his face and help his image. But do you ultimately think this stuff will lead to his eventual demise in the sport?
I don't think so, because I think for one thing, how long is his tenure in the sport anyway? Like, I don't think Floyd's a guy that we're going to see, you know, going to that Hopkins level where he's fighting as a geriatric. I don't think Floyd's built that way. I think, he still, at the end of the day, is the biggest earner in boxing. He's the biggest draw. And I think he draws as a heel or a babyface, you know, for lack of a better term. Like, if you hate Floyd, now you're going to pay to see him get his ass kicked. If you think what he did is despicable and reprehensible, you want to see Maidana bust this dude upside the head. So you're going to pay for that fight.
And he's very calculated. We've noticed in the last, probably two fights for sure, he was not, he didn't attack Canelo Alvarez. He didn't attack Marcos Maidana. The Guerrero stuff, he was sort of backed into a corner because of Guerrero's pops.
You're a woman beater, man. He's a woman beater.
You probably have to go back all the way to the De La Hoya Hatton Marquez fights where he was just full on dick. And his strategy was just to be the heel. But, you know, ever since then, Mosley wasn't a formidable threat. He didn't have to attack him. Victor Ortiz was a joke. And he respects Cotto. So he has a way to turn it on and turn it off, and whether it's appropriate or not. And I think that's, you know, savvy on his part. And, yeah, he's done all this stuff. He's getting older. I think that's been the other factor in what we've seen of Floyd recently. He's now 37. He'll be 38 next year. And, you know, if he can find a way to stay out of trouble between now and whenever his retirement is, I think this will, this will blow over and people will sort of move on and selectively forget on certain Saturday nights of the year that what he's done in the past is pretty horrific.
Yeah, and I think the bottom line, like you mentioned earlier, is it's boxing. And I think boxing has a litany of stars and legends and great performers that if you go beyond the ring and check into their personal lives, you probably wouldn't like what you found.
Yeah. And that's most athletes. Not just boxers. I mean, there's a lot of athletes out there that if you did your research and, you know, I if I ever have a daughter, she will not ever, ever, ever date an athlete because I just know too much that goes on with those guys, and I would lose my mind knowing what could possibly be going on.
Hey, Daddy, this is my new boyfriend, Swaggy P.
No.
And that's the lesson for all the young girls out there listening to the show, which I don't know if they are, but don't date an athlete, date the agent. You get the money and it's probably a much easier life.
Yeah.
Don't date LeBron, date Rich Paul.
There you go.
I think that's going to do it this week again. This was a interesting show because we kind of just looked at some topics and unpacked them and talked about them. I think this may be some of the direction that we may be heading in future episodes.
Yeah, I like this format. I think this show is has flowed well, and hopefully the listeners agree.
And you can leave feedback each and every week in a couple of different ways. You can hit us up on Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/thekingsofsport. Leave some feedback, and whether we agree with it or not, we'll definitely make note of it. And, of course, you can hit us up on Twitter, KOS_POD, CosPod on Twitter. So, without any further ado, Marcus, where can people follow you, check you out, and where can the people in Vegas holler at you? Because I'm sure they can't wait to see you again.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Marco Will, MarcoWill. And if we have any listeners in the Boston area, I'm looking for restaurant recommendations. I will be in Boston NetSuite for NABJ, so the National Association of Black Journalists Convention, with our buddy Morgan Campbell and Gary Washburn and Mart Spears and probably anyone else we've had on the show who's black will probably be there. So it should be a good time. Should be some good stories, hopefully.
I was going to say, I don't know. I don't know if you could top Smith versus.
It's going to be hard to top the fight, the Rumble in the Orlando Jungle last year, but.
Yeah, I can just picture where's the event going to be held?
The party will be at the House of Blues again this year.
Okay,
in Boston, right outside of Fenway Park.
That should be a great atmosphere.
And the Yankees are in town too, so it should be a good atmosphere.
Very interesting too. You know, I think we talked about it last time when you told us that the NABJ was going to be held in Boston this year. Like an interesting city, both journalistically and sports wise and racially.
Yeah, there should be some good topics that I should share on the show. One, there's a discussion about being a black Celtic, and they're going to have, you know, Doc Rivers, one of the black beat writers for the Celtics, some of the current players, some of the old players, but just sort of how these guys have dealt with, you know, playing in a city that has been racially charged like Boston, but playing for a team like the Celtics where, you know, everyone embraces that team in the city. So, and then Adam Silver is going to make an appearance at NABJ this year. I forgot what panel he's on, but he's the man of the people now. So I'm curious to see what he has to say. So it should be interesting.
Yeah, I wonder if Adam Silver is going to come in and do that pimp walk to the podium like President Obama did when he announced that Osama bin Laden was killed. And Silver's going to come in with an announcement. Donald Sterling is not owning the team anymore, black people. You're welcome.
He's gonna get a stand. I bet you he's gonna get a standing though as soon as he walks in. the journalists who shouldn't be cheering will probably get up on their feet and cheer this man.
Yeah, David Stern never got that.
No.
But yeah, it should be interesting. I hope you have some fun and bring back some interesting stories. I wonder if Big Hugh will be outside the House of Blues sipping on something in a brown paper bag. Like, I know you want to leave me. I refuse to let you go. that'll be something to look forward to in the weeks to come. Should be a very interesting summer. Like we got the NFL, and we like I said, we're already talking about the NFL, and it's not even August. Baseball. Hopefully, we'll talk some baseball next week.
Yeah, hopefully. And make no promises.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll have plenty of opinions about wrestling with TNA's New York shows continuing to air, and also the new stable in the WWE. So if you come to the Kings of Sport for wrestling, we'll hook you up when it's something we like talking about.
I'm halfway on the fence about going to TNA. I'll be in New York after Boston then for the three set of tapings, and. I don't know. The problem is I don't want to go alone, and I don't know anyone else in the New York area, I don't think, who would sit through TNA with me.
You should holler at Court Bauer.
No, that's all right.
I mean, he probably had to go in a disguise since he's Mr. ROH now.
Yeah, no, he'll probably rat me out or something. Put me on Instagram. So,
like, stop snitching.
Yeah.
Trying to think, dude. I'm surprised you don't know more people in New York, man.
Who are wrestling fans? That's the thing.
Ah, okay, okay. Hollett Rosenberg.
Yeah, no.
Vandenberg and Rosenberg. Sounds like the worst law firm ever.
The Black and the Jew.
Hey, you can come together over TNA. That'll be the peace accord.
Yeah, yeah. So if there's any listeners who are going to the TNA tapings in August, let me know.
Yeah, that should be interesting. I will say, the first New York show that aired last week, I enjoyed it. It was a little ECW heavy, but you could see why they would do that for that audience. But
and it's temporary.
Yeah. It's not like, what was it, a few years ago when they did the EV 2.0. Like, yeah. That was stupid. And it took over the whole show. This was just something that is meant to get the Bully and Dixie angle over. So I'm cool with it.
Yeah, it was fine. I saw parts of it.
Yeah. And we had Jeff Hardy back, so Willow's dead.
Oh, jeez.
For the time being.
Poor Jeff.
Yeah.
Why'd he do that to yourself, Jeff?
Yeah, like the first bump when he landed on his shoulder or his head. That was bad enough on the steel steps, and then when he did the swanton, I was like, come on, man. Come on. but at least he wasn't Willow, so it wasn't all bad.
Willow.
Yeah. So that's going to do it this week. I don't think I plugged my Twitter.
No, you didn't.
Yeah. In the number 8, MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Been getting a lot of followers. I think I'm getting close to 1,000.
There you go.
Yeah, and been getting into some interesting conversations about wrestling and sports and politics lately. Like, I got into this big kerfluffle. It started innocently enough. I watched Red Eye on Fox News. I don't know if you ever seen that show.
When I'm up real late, yeah.
Like, I think it's a pretty interesting show. I watched it, so I tweeted one of the hosts in terms of they had a story about some guy in wherever it was, probably in the Heartland somewhere, that made a float with Obama, and he was like at an outhouse. And I had made the comment that, you know, what may not be racist to you, you know, can be viewed differently, that, you know, through the lens of somebody that's African American. And me and him went back and forth for a couple of times and had some really interesting comments. And I think we ended on a good note. But then the next thing I know, the next day I wake up and I've got like, at Freedom Fighter 2013. Oh, yeah. What are you talking about? Why does everything have to be racial? I'm like, well, everything's not racial, but race is a part of everything, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Especially when you're black. Like, I don't get to take this off when I go home.
Nope.
It's not a suit.
By the way, unrelated topic, not regarding race. I love you, John Pollock. No hard feelings about, you know, my comment about Way. It's just, it's Way. Everyone loves Way. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, listen to Review and Impact from this past Thursday.
John threw down the gauntlet. He felt some type of way about you.
Yeah, his feelings hurt. I mean, and we're both, I think John and I are alike in terms of when he mentioned we were both in work mode, and, you know, John is John, and I just had a chance to chat with Way briefly, and that was it. No beef.
I did invite him on the show, but he said, I don't know, Nate, I may be in work mode that night. So, but I'll be on Review and Impact this week.
Oh, that's right. Way's in California.
Yep. Way is on a marathon shooting expedition for the Fight Network. So Way's out of pocket for at least the next week, maybe 2 weeks. So I'm not fully versed in Wei Ting's itinerary, but I will be co-hosting with John this week on Review and Impact. If you're interested in checking that out, go to Fight Network, fightnetwork.com, and be on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you find podcasts. So again, in the number 8, MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. If you want to talk wrestling, sports, that man called Sting, or get all racial. You know, I can do whatever, man. That's going to do it for this week. Another episode of the Kings of Sport podcast is in the books. Come back next week for another show. ain't no telling what we'll talk about, but whatever we talk about, it's going to be fun. So check us out on iTunes, Stitcher. Tell your friends, share the show, and leave feedback, you know, because as much as I like talking to Marcus, I like getting your views as well. Yes. You know, so we still got to work on this ending, though. Like, the ending, it doesn't flow as well as it used to.
No, it doesn't.
But so we'll go think of an ending, and we'll talk to you same time here next week. So for Marcus Vandenberg, I'm the Godfather, Nate Milton. One love, everybody. You've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.